The Finance, Legal and Administration and Real Estate Committee of Desert Healthcare District to order. I'd like a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
I will second that. All in favor?
Aye.
The motion is indeed carried. If there's any individuals in the public that wish to comment on matters not on the agenda, this is an opportunity to do so. We have a policy about 3-minute limitations on presentations. Are there any such individuals, Andrea?
No, these may be, we do have some guests here, but they may be with London Guthrie. Not sure.
But those aren't citizens from the community who wish to make a commentary at this point.
I don't think so. Normally they would rename themselves.
Okay. I'd like to move forward then with the approval of the agenda, the approval of the minutes of the September 14 meeting.
I move approval.
I will second that, and by acclamation, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. And Conrado, the CEO report, sir?
Oh, no, there is nothing specific to report. I think we have a pretty packed agenda today, so we'll move through it. Thank you.
All right, thank you, sir. Chris, would you like to give us the Chief Administration Officer report?
Sure.
Currently, walking us through the financials to the extent that there are any issues.
Okay, that sounds good. So starting with the CAO report, as well as the Las Palmas Medical Plaza update. So just briefly, the all four audit reports will be presented today. We normally have three with regard to the district, the retirement protection plan, and the foundation. Additionally, this year, and we've discussed it previously, that there's a separate supplemental audit on the foundation side with regard to the federal funding that we've received for the COVID relief help through the CARES and ELC funding. So the auditors will be with us to present those a little later in the meeting. So Las Palmas Medical Plaza, we have still essentially the two suites that are available. At this point, I've kind of given up on Dr. Kim with regard to the suite that he was interested in a few months ago. I have not received any response to any of my recent messages. So we're actively moving forward, seeking prospective tenants on. It's a 1200 square foot space, and then also a 880 square foot space. So our broker is actively working on that, and hopefully we'll have some future lease agreements to consider in the near future.
Having a vacancy rate that we have is really highly desirable. We're at what, under 5% or close?
Yeah.
We're right around that number. That's really fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, especially coming through the pandemic that we have, and, you know, really we've only lost one tenant through that process. You know, we've worked with a few of the others with regard to some deferred rent. All of those have been, you know, holding true to their payments. I did get a little communication from one of the tenants that it indicated that they were having a little struggle because some of their revenue source had been affected due to the pandemic, but they were going to try to, you know, continue with it. I told them that we could, you know, try to work with them on some, you know, maybe some deferment, something like that. But they just asked them if they needed, you know, please, we'll meet and discuss that. But I have not heard anything additionally from them. And we just received their current month's rent just today. So.
I have a question. Do we know from the hospital, either from Carol or from Les, who sit on the board, whether there's increasing applications to the medical staff, which potentially could generate requests for additional space on our part, which in a critical mass could generate interest in us developing more space someplace else. Do we know anything about that, Conrado?
Not to my knowledge, and the organization that works with Tenet with regard to some of their, you know, medical staff and looking for office suites and that, they're usually pretty good about communicating with me if they are looking for some space. And
they are looking for space.
They communicate with me if they're looking.
If they are looking for space.
Correct. And I have not heard anything from them recently.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Any other questions regarding the office building at this time? All the construction work, the fire, the landscaping, what's the status of that stuff?
So the landscaping is essentially all done. We've got a couple of electrical issues that we're dealing with there with the contractor. Hope to have that resolved within the next month or so. But the landscaping is done. We did have, from the heavy rains that we received 2 or 3 weeks ago, some drainage issue problems where we had some flooding that entered some of the suites, and our on-site contractor is taking care of those issues with the tenants. And then also we're looking at resolution to the drainage so that, you know, if we have that kind of deluge again in rain, that we're better situated to accommodate the runoff from the drainage. So with regard to the fire sprinkler project, the materials have, the bulk of the materials have just been brought to the site. They're being stored in a locked container on site. And so we'll be, the contractor will be working with the tenants to start scheduling their work to get into those suites. And again, it's going to be, you know, juggling with the tenants and their working hours, working evenings and weekends, which they, the contractor realizes that that's the situation that we're under. So,
are we under any pressure from the city or from permitting agencies to get done? Or are we on the right trajectory at this point from it? And do we have an estimated completion date?
Well, I mean, we're hoping to be done in 3 months, but it's not like, you know, we have a definitive construction schedule, especially when we're working with around tenants and their schedule and that. But everything's, you know, been approved by the city and that so far. Our Chris Mills, who is our engineer and project manager, he's been on the city council for years and years with Palm Springs, no longer anymore, but, you know, he has the connections with the city and that. So we are in good order.
In good shape. Okay, thank you very much for that clarification. Anything else relative to the office building, ladies and gentlemen?
Nope. I'm good.
Okay, moving forward on the financial statements. So we're looking at the September financial statements beginning on page 9. This is our monthly summary, but also the 3 month summary for the first quarter. And so this page 9 just shows some of the items or the areas that have some significant variance to them. So on the income code 4000, we're under by 450,000 on the property tax revenues. Some of that's a function of timing receiving from the county. But that will catch up. So I don't see any issues there. So that's the majority of that. The direct expenses, most of that is related to the wages and supporting kinds of expenses. We do have a couple of positions that are still vacant. We'll be looking to fill those at some point in the not too distant future. and then several other expense items that are, some of them are just associated with still the pandemic environment. You know, nobody's doing any traveling, you know, like the ACHD convention that just took place last month, you know, changes were made there that was originally going to be in person, changed to virtual. So essentially overall, there's some expense savings there that we did not incur as a result of that. So, you know, we have a small $35,000 variance in the general administrative expenses, some small variances there, a $265,000 variance in the professional fees expense, and these are all positive and variances the rest of the way. Most of that is associated with our professional services expense, which we are just now currently working with Kaufman Hall. We have not seen their first invoice yet, but those are going to be pretty hefty invoices at $125,000 a month. So we'll see some expense beginning to come through. And then the grants expense is significantly under budget presently, basically because we've been holding off doing any grant funding until we get through the strategic plan and identify the areas that the district or the board chooses to start allocating funds towards grants. So we'll look forward to incurring some expenses with regard to that when we award grants in the not too distant future. Any questions regarding the summary part of the income statement?
Nope.
Hearing none, let's go to, yeah, there's detailed pages that obviously support the summary statement that, that you're aware of, but let's bounce down to, it would be page 14, please, Andrea. So we've got the balance sheet and the comparison. So we've got our in our checking and our investment accounts. You see that we have $63 million September of this year compared to about $61 million last year. Some of that's a function of that we've been paying less out on our grants. And then also a function of that we've had better, you know, on our property tax revenues and that. There's been increases, obviously, over the last year or so with regard to that. So the property tax, well, let's look at the rent receivable deferred COVID, the 1204 account. So you can see that this is the rent that was deferred for those few tenants that that we worked with during that early part of the virus or the pandemic. So you can see last year that we had $200,000 in that deferred rent. And so that's whittled down now to $140,000. And so that will continue to.
Do you have a timetable, Chris, for that?
Well, it varies because it's all set up based on the remainder of each of the tenants' remaining life of their lease.
So, amortized over the lease is what you said.
Yeah. So, okay. So some leases are, you know, still have, you know, 3 years out. Others are more like, you know, 1 to 2 years. So,
I understand. Thank you.
But I think we're, I don't know the exact date that we're looking to have that all paid off, but, you know, within the next couple of years, I think it'll be resolved. So.
And none of that appears in the AR aging, or is that the AR aging that's just current when you get to page 19? It's not there, so I assume it's...
Right. Yeah, that's separate. So the what you would be looking at the aging is actually on the line above that, right below the $63 million. So there's $184,000 there.
Right.
And we'll look at the detail of that when we get to the page 19 that you're talking about.
That was my question. Thank you.
So this is independent of the
current annual.
The current accounts receivable. So again, we've talked about before the difference in the accounting, the way we treated the property tax receivable and the revenue. We're taking that directly to the income statement going forward. So that's why we have the zero balance versus 1.5 million last year. Let's move forward to the next page, Andrea, please.
Well, I have a question about the AR account, the aging.
Okay.
Why is the healthcare foundation and the district out of sync?
Out of sync?
Yeah, they're the only ones that have a meaningful age.
Oh, well, no. And what happens there is, just the history behind it is, we allocate labor and overhead from the district to the foundation. So all of the staff, employees, all the expense is incurred in the district. We allocate that to the foundation. So the foundation then ultimately needs to pay the district for those costs. So that builds up a little bit, but after, two or three months, then we pay that down. So it'll be paid down again by the time we see the October statement. So.
Okay, it just looked funny because both of those accounts are in your in desk drawer. That's the funny part of it.
Well, one nice thing, we know that we have a pretty secure, vendor, I guess, so to speak, that we'll be able to collect that from. I don't think we'll have to go to collections to get it.
For sure.
Okay, so on the next page, Andrea, the liabilities in that. Essentially, we're just seeing, a little difference in the grant awards payable, the 2131 account. Most of that is just shifting the $1.6 million that will be payable to CVAG for the CV link. So essentially, then if you look down on line 2281, you'll see that the current year of $4,990,000 is, the $1.6 million less from last year. So it's really just shifting from long-term to current year.
Conrado, just a question. Do you happen to know if CVAG keeps utilization statistics for the bike path? If you happen to know that, I'm just curious.
I do not know. And there is only one portion of the CV link that is complete. So they're adding, I believe they're adding other portions, but it's still in construction.
Okay, thank you.
Let's move through. We looked at, we want to take a look briefly at the AR aging that Director Shore was talking about on page 19. Again, we'll have that paid down by next month. And we're in really good shape with the tenants. The negative amounts there are showing prepayments. So we're in good shape there. So moving forward to the deposits on page 20, nothing significant there. The property tax receipts on page 21, basically kind of showing some timing difference there that will be caught up, I'm sure. So the extra deposits for the medical plaza, nothing significant there. The check register on page 24. Any questions regarding check register?
I'll tell you, it really makes it easy when you see the grant expenditures. It makes it easy to understand it. And I really appreciate you making that change.
Yeah, thank you, Eric, for doing that. Moving forward from that, we've got the credit card detail and then also the check register for the medical plaza. on page 28. We're down two participants on the retirement protection plan. And moving slowly but surely, I keep expecting more and more that will retire, but I've not seen significant movement at this point. Page 29 is the grant payment schedule. Just highlighting here on the yellow line that the district has 5.8 million available to award grants for the current year. So it includes 4 million from our current year budget, as well as the 1.8 million that the board approved to carry forward from the prior year. And that is it on the financial statements. If there's not any other questions, then.
If there are no other questions, I'd like to move acceptance of the current financial reports through the end of this month.
I move approval. Oh, you're moving? I'll second.
I'll second that. No, I will second
okay.
that.
Okay.
Madam President, there are limits to your powers. I will second that by approval. The financial reports are accepted as submitted. We have some other business related to the audit reports. Chris, if you wouldn't mind introducing our guest and the subjects at hand, please.
Great, thank you. We've had another great year, busy year with our audits. This is the second year with Lund and Guthrie as our CPA firm. Gary Dack is the lead audit partner. Like I indicated a little earlier, we have our normal standard audits, which are the district, the retirement protection plan, and the foundation. This year, additionally, we have what's called a single audit, or an A133 audit, that falls as a supplemental audit report that goes with the foundation, and that's also as a result of the federal funding that we received from the CARES Act, as well as the ELC funding. And so we have our audit firm representatives. Shannon Maidment is the auditor that is solely-
Breaking up, Chris.
I'm sorry, breaking up? Is that any better?
Yeah, you're
any better? All right. Sorry about that. All right. So Shannon Maidment is the auditor that is solely responsible for the single audit with regard to the federal funds. Shannon will be addressing that single audit as we get to that point. Presently, Gary Dack will be presenting the district and retirement protection plan, as well as the foundation. Now, from a housekeeping standpoint, the district and the retirement protection plan will be subject to the committee's vote for action in the district meeting, but we're providing all the communication and opportunity for the committee to ask questions on the foundation as well during this meeting, but the official action will take place during the foundation meeting. So unless there's any other questions regarding that, Gary Dack, if you would take it away, please.
So let's see, I guess we need to unmute Gary. I'm not sure which one he is, but someone was unmuted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes?
We can.
Okay, should I proceed?
Please.
Okay,
we don't see you, but we hear you.
I'm sorry?
We don't see you, but we hear you.
Really? Okay,
I can move you to panelist, Gary, and you can turn on your camera.
I got the camera on, I thought. It says join us panelist.
Right, so hit yes, or.
We see your name now.
And then just turn on your video and we're good to go.
I got the video on. Get on guest list. Do I need to hit that?
Guest list.
That's the only prompt I have on the screen right now.
So I just hit the button that said ask to start video, and you should have something that says start video.
Oh boy.
Or hit the button that says start video.
Well,
start and stop. You don't have that.
I'm not seeing that.
If you don't mind not being on video, we can hear you just fine.
Okay. Let's do it that way. Cause like I said, I do these Zooms all the time. And I'm not sure. Start.
There you are. There you are. We see you now.
Okay. Now I don't see you, but that's okay. I'll talk. Okay. We're ready to go now that we got all the housekeeping done. I'm going to cover the three audits. And as Chris said, we're going to go through the district first. And what I'd like to say on the district, the audit went well. We did not have any audit adjustments. And Chris and Eric did a great job providing the information. It was accurate information. Again, we did not have any adjustments. And we had the unmodified opinion, which is the highest level of assurance you can have when you have an audit. And that's what you've had the last many, many years of audits. So a clean opinion. I think the things I just wanted to talk about on the district are just some of the highlights on the numbers. And as I was listening to Chris talk about your more current financial statements, they're pretty much similar to what I'm going to say here. So I'll give you a very brief overview. On my page 9 for the statement of net position, it's your assets and liabilities. And again, I'm looking at the end of June. And your total...
page would that be, Andrea? So I could... Oh, okay. You're going to have it on the screen. Okay.
I'm trying to find that now. Just a moment. Would you happen to know, Chris? I don't.
As you go along, Gary, I'm going to try to keep up so that I can give the page numbers of our packet, okay?
Yeah. Chris, I'm just going to do the statement of net position and the statement of revenues and expenses page 9 and 10.
There we go. I think it's ours is 46 and 47.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's look at the first one of that. So your assets, you can see your assets in the middle of the page, 78 million, very solid operation as you have for many, many years. And you can look at your assets, the makeup of that. You're, you know, basically have the cash and investments alone. It's about three different lines there. Totaling about $64 million. So a very solid operation. As you discussed in the past, you have this large reserve set aside at one of your investment brokers just for the monies for the tenant lease. In the event there was a premature termination of the lease, that lease is coming up in 2027. So you want to have some set aside monies, which you do. And then also you've kind of earmarked some seismic costs that you may or may not have to incur here by the end of the decade. So again, some big events ahead of you, but looks like you have some solid monies put away in your investments in cash. So 78 million in assets. Your largest liability clearly is your grants payable. You have total liabilities of about $11 million and the grants are $9.5 million. So obviously, that's what you're there for. You're giving out distributions of grants in the community. And again, you have a substantial amount of grants payable at the end of the year. So that's the highlights of your assets and liabilities. If you turn to your next page, my page 10 and your the next page, is your revenues and expenses. You have solid recurring revenues each year, fortunately, with your rental income and your property taxes from the county. So you had about $9 million of revenues this year, and it's pretty consistent each year. As I said, it's a staple recurring amount. And grant allocations is your largest expense, $4 million. So again, you can tell that your activity continues to increase on your monies that you set aside to approve for grant allocations. So $4 million in grants for the year. The only other item I want to talk about on your statement of revenues and expenses is the about three quarters of the way down the page, retirement plan change. I think Chris has probably discussed this during the summer with you guys when you had your updated evaluation for your retirement plan. And the assumptions changed in the pension plan during this particular year. And that $5 million is basically a negative expense because it adjusted your previous net liability for the pension to now a net asset, meaning you have more retirement assets than you had for liabilities at the time. And the reason for that, as you may or may not remember or know, is the assumptions changed in that the actuary had calculated payouts for terminated employees requesting benefit payments to be requesting under annuities. And you really only have 7 individuals currently on that. So it's kind of a flip. You know, as Chris had talked to them about it, they redid it based on lump sum payouts. And so it really changed the numbers. And the net effect is it basically flipped your expenses to a negative amount this year, which obviously helped you because now you have a plan asset for the retirement plan. But when you look at the third to the bottom number on that page, increase in net position for the year, a nice $7.5 million increase for the year. So again, the district obviously has some solid operations continuing each year. You obviously have the funding to continue to pay out your grants, and then you have your reserves, as I said, in your cash and investments. That's really the only numbers I wanted to talk about on the district. So do you have any questions on the district before I go into the retirement plan financial statement?
So my only question is on that, even though Chris has already talked to us about the retirement plan benefits change, if someone just looks at this and seeing that big change, was that going to be explained somewhere, or does that need an asterisk?
Go ahead, Chris.
Answer that question. I'd like to modify, add something to it. Wouldn't it be wise to somehow, in a footnote or an asterisk, indicate that this is a one-time adjustment, so that no one expects these kinds of things to happen going forward?
Well, there is some discussion going on in the footnote regarding the retirement protection plan, but you know, we can take a look at that and third, you know, if it needs to be enhanced, but. But my goal here is to, knowing that this year does have this significant change, to be able to have it explained well so that readers of the audit report can know and understand what that's about. And invariably, there's going to be questions or some clarification that that some readers of the audit report will need, but you know, we're trying to explain it as best we can. I'm trying to see the footnote for that is footnote 14, and I'll take a look at the explanation there, because I know that we did include some language around that.
Yeah, there's about 5 pages describing that. And I'm just trying to see, we currently state that the actuarial assumptions relate to the lump sum payout, but maybe we can emphasize that that's a change from the prior year, Chris.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, so that's a point well taken.
And therefore, this is a one-time adjustment.
Right.
Adjustment to the basis.
Yeah, the assumption shouldn't change from year to year. This was an unusual change, but you're right.
Can we put, sorry, Arthur. Can we put an asterisk or in parentheses behind the line item on that revenue that refers to note 14?
Yes, we can.
I'm just concerned about the relatively unsophisticated reader who comes back to us next year and says, hey, why don't you have another adjustment like that? I'd like to just see some language that says this is a non-recurring adjustment for all the other reasons that you have in the 14-page explanation.
Yes, let's do that. We'll reference on the statement of revenues the retirement plan expense to the footnote 14, and then foot 14 will beef that up a little bit to explain the change, and it's a one-time assumption change.
Thank you.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, so are we ready to go on to the retirement protection plan audit?
Yep.
As you all know, it's a frozen plan, and it basically at 1997, the employees at the time are covered in the plan, and they're not obviously allowed to contribute. And basically the activity in this particular plan has about $5.3 million in assets. And that went up from last year's 4.5. So again, the monies have been set aside for the plan. And again, with this change in the assumptions, the plan assets exceed what the potential pension obligation is going to be. The only activity that really occurs in the retirement plan on the statement of changes in net assets, I'm not sure if you're following around along, but it's my page 4, Chris, on the protection plan financial. But basically the activity in this frozen plan, he had about $1 million in additions to the plan. And it's primarily that the investments performed very well this year, $900,000. So, the plan grew by 900 and then it decreased by the distribution of the benefits to the payouts. I mean, the employees, former employees will come to Chris and request payout of their account. And this year was close to $600,000 of payouts. So when you take the large increase less the payouts, you had an increase to the plan assets of about $500,000. And so that's really the highlights of what happened in the retirement plan. And again, the footnotes primarily detail how all the investments are invested and further information on the investment funds. And then they talk about the assumptions that we just alluded to on the district's statement. But again, it's a plan that's not active other than the current earnings of the investment portfolio and then the payouts of benefits.
Are these restricted funds?
I'm sorry?
Are these restricted funds?
Yeah, these are restricted just for the plan, absolutely.
Okay, here's my hypothetical question. Let's assume that by year end, everybody who is eligible requests payment and we have an excess amount, net amount in the account after payout. What happens to those funds and how are they treated going forward, either the foundation or in the district financial statements?
Well, you have sufficient assets now, but in the event, I mean, because like I said, with the change in assumptions, you have like $5.3 million in assets, and then the potential liability, if everyone quit today, would be 3.5 payout. So right now, you do, but if you were the other side and upside down, then
stay with it positive first. What happens if we have a positive balance after payout to everybody?
I think what he's saying is that if we've paid out the $3.5 million and we have $1.8 million remaining, right, today, what do we do with that? That is kind of an off balance sheet account in a sense, but we have funded that account from district funds previously. So the funds from that account could be transferred back to the district at that point.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Would that require any board action or is that just something that's an accounting function?
I think we would just communicate it through finance committee that's taking place. And, you know, there would be plenty of communication with regard to that everything's paid out from all the participants that would be transferring that back to the district.
Thank you.
Okay, we ready to roll into the foundation now? Okay, the foundation, once again, no audit adjustments. Chris and Eric, excellent job once again on the operations for the foundation. An unmodified opinion, as I said, on the district. So all highest level of assurance. So on the foundation, Chris, I'm not sure, I don't have the screen in front, but are you at the statement of financial position to talk about the assets?
We are there, yes.
My page 3. Okay, so my page 3. You can see that you have $8.3 million in total assets. So it had a nice increase from last year of close to $2 million. And you can see the components of that. Cash at the top line, investments at the bottom line. If you couple those together, you had about $7 million of cash and investments. Last year, those comparable numbers were 6.2. So you had an increase in your cash and investments of about $800,000. And then your other large increase during the year was the grants receivable. You can see that was a new account during the year. That's 1.1. And that's the amounts that are still owed under or to be collected, under the new grants that for the COVID related grants coming from through the counties.
I'm sorry, Gary, but yes. I need to stop you a bit for a minute because you went right into the statements, but the management letters, The one thing that I had a question about that.
We'll come back to that because it's related to the single audit.
Okay. Okay. Put it later. Thank you. That's fine.
Yeah, Shannon will cover that. So. Okay. As far as the statement itself, the grants receivable are, again, the amounts that are still owed to you under those grants. In the liabilities for the foundation, you can see total liabilities about $6.5 million, and it's primarily all your grants that the board has approved, but have not paid out at this point. So again, your largest liability obligation is your grants that have been approved. So again, a nice number there, because that's what you're there for, is to provide the grants in the community. So that's the overview highlights of the assets and liabilities. If we turn the page to the next page, my page 4, your next in sequence, statement of activities. You can see the grand total columns on the far right, grants and bequests, second line down. You can see had a nice pickup of $3.5 million. Obviously, with all the new grants from the pass-throughs from the county, the investment gains had a nice pickup. You can see your investment portfolio had a nice pickup compared to last year. That went up about $400,000 from the previous year. And so, again, the expenses with everything going up, as I just talked about, and obviously the flip side are your expenses down below for your grant payouts, support in the community. And again, you had a nice $4.7 million payout and expense during the year compared to, you know, close to $900,000 last year. So again, all positive on the foundation. The only thing I want to talk about in addition to the statements is an important footnote on my page 11, footnote 5, Chris, the grant payable. I want to refer the members to that footnote, grants payable.
112.
Okay, so again, a lot of information on that page, but it deserves some attention here. The grants payable, as I said previously, but you can see the bottom number on the table there, $6.3 million are the total grants that you have approved, but not yet paid at the end of the year. And you can see the names of the granting agencies that you're going to be paying them out to in the future. So again, a significant list, and again, a very, very nice list there at that. Okay, so that's the overview of the financial statement. And any questions on the foundation? Hello?
And this is separate from the single audit. So
yeah,
once you've had opportunity to ask any questions regarding the basic normal financial statements, as I'll call them, then we'll move into the single audit.
All right. So are we ready for Shannon to present the single audit?
I think we are ready.
Okay. Hi, everybody. If you want to flip to your page 115, that's the first page of the single audit report. So this is the single audit report, and it's a separate compliance audit for non-federal entities that receive federal funding. Single audits are required if you receive or if you expend over $750,000, and the foundation did this year with the pass-through funds from the county. You've expended $1,290,000. That's on page 122. And included within this report is the opinion on this statement you have in front of you, the schedule of expenditures of federal awards. And the opinion is a clean, unmodified opinion, just like the other statements. So that's great news. Also included in here, which we don't have to skim over in the PDF, but are the internal control reports that are related to the single audit, which indicate there are no material weaknesses that we detected or significant deficiencies or findings. And so if we had any of those items, all of that would be disclosed in this report. And if you turn to page 124, this is where it would indicate if there were findings. So again, it kind of summarizes there's no significant deficiencies, and it highlights the major programs, which are both of the federal programs that you had this year. And at the bottom of the page, number 9, it indicates that the Desert Healthcare Foundation was determined not to be a low-risk oddity. And that sounds alarming because if you're not low-risk, then you're high-risk. But that is the proper language for this report. And you as the foundation are not considered to be low-risk only because you haven't had a single audit in the past 2 years. So I have a lot of clients that get alarmed with that language, but that is not alarming. And it just is an indicator of the type of testing that I have to do on my end. And then the federal government understands obviously what that wording is indicating, but by no means is it should it be alarming. And that's why we have that parenthesis comment. Since the foundation has not had a single audit in the past 2 years, they are required to be considered not low risk. So that is the only reason that's indicated there. And then the last page of the report, the next page in your PDF, is it indicates there were no findings for last year, which you didn't have a single audit last year, but this is the proper reporting for that. And we again indicate down below with the asterisk that there was no single audit last year. But again, as required reporting is indicated, we have to show that there were no findings. So I just want to clarify that. And with that said, again, no findings, no issues, everything was great for the single audit, but I do have the management letter, which is on page 98. Sorry to go back, but I wanted to clarify that the single audit was all clean and unmodified. So the management letter, and I know you're not used to receiving this, but this is really an opportunity to strengthen controls make improvements, basically. And both of these items are related to the process involved for the single audit. And so the first one is just generally compliance with agreements. And so more specifically in the single audit, we noticed that the agreement had indicated that the funds that received from the county were to be in a separate non-interest bearing account. And management did not do that. There was in a non-interest-bearing account, but it wasn't separated from other funds. And so it was just as the audit was getting started. And I told Chris to go ahead and reach out to the county, make sure they're aware of that oversight, and then go ahead and separate those funds since you continue to hold funds to be expended. And so that has been taken care of. The county doesn't appear to have any issue with that. So it's not a finding for my purposes for a single audit, but it's definitely something to be aware of and make sure to comply with in the future on any other grants. The second one, the documentation for the supporting the contractor expenses. So during my selections, I had some expenses that I had requested management for further information, and they had to go back to the contractor to request that information. All of it turned out fine. It looked like everything was allowable costs. So there was no issues as far as a finding in the single audit. However, my recommendation is here is because Chris didn't have those things already in his files. I recommended that you consider going back to those ones that I didn't test and collect that same information. And also on a going forward basis to make sure in case the county did come back and do some monitoring, you would want to ensure that you had all those things on hand so that they had no issues with that.
And what kind of information is that we don't have that you needed?
It was related to some of the some of the expenses that would have been outlaid to the community by each of those contractors, such as the gift certificate or gift cards. One entity, they had provided all the support for how they purchased the gift cards at the stores, and that's what we had on file. But we had requested, okay, well, how are you dispersing it to the community? How do we ensure that those funds are meeting the use as intended for COVID? And so the contractor came back and said, okay, here's our process with how we handle that. Here's a spreadsheet of all the people that we have provided those to. So that's pretty much the best you could do on that type of tracking. So it was those types of things that were a little bit further than what have already been requested, but there by no means was there no support. It was just more that I wanted more than what was already provided.
How material was that in dollars, just out of curiosity?
None of those were very material. No, I think in the one instance was, there was $35,000 for one of the expenses for the gift cards, I believe. But again, it all checked out and they had all the initial expenses for that. So the if the entity had paid for those gift cards, all the check copies were already provided and in the files for the foundation. I wanted additional support of how they were dispersed to the community.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Is there any language you'd like to recommend that we include in our RFPs that would provide this to us without any extraordinary work effort on our part?
I'm sorry, repeat the first part of that.
Is there any language that you would like to recommend to us to incorporate into our future RFPs of all contractors so that information is automatically submitted and doesn't create any burden on Chris or our accounting staff to go chasing this stuff down, given the amount of materiality that it isn't?
Well, if I may answer that, Director Shore. So essentially what this is, so, you know, all of our audits in the past have been with all documentation that we have had in-house because we've been paying out the money. So with this being, you know, a new type of audit and also funding that is pass through monies to these CBOs. So we've collected documentation from the CBOs that support the, you know, the monies that have been paid out. What Shannon is talking about is that, and it makes perfect sense, is that, you know, where did that money ultimately end up? And how do we prove and confirm that without having to go to the CBO? Because, you know, we could go to the CBO and ask them for the documentation and they provided it, but it's just better and safer for us in the long run to have all of that detailed documentation in-house. And so we are working now with the CBOs and they're providing it without any problem. So, you know, it's just an education thing. And now as we go forward, when we're working with CBOs on any of these types of audits, you know exactly what we need to request from the CBOs, and they're cooperative. They know that they need to provide that if they're gonna get paid. And so again, it's just the additional level of documentation that we need to maintain in-house so that we do not have to go to a CBO in an audit situation and ask for that documentation.
And bottom line is you're onto it. That's fine.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Letty, I think you had a question.
No, I was just wondering why he had skipped that part, but he already explained it.
No, and I think when I do it for the packet, to the board, I put that document very last because it probably makes sense to have it last.
Yeah. And I do want to compliment staff and our auditors for this being the first year of doing the single audit. From other experience that I have, Shannon, that this is a very, very good, clean process. So compliments to staff and to our auditors.
Thank you. Thank you to staff, definitely.
Thanks for the gift. The gift.
Yeah, I think the...
From now on, I'm going to put honorable in front of my name.
Honorable.
Yeah, definitely, you know, special thanks to Eric and Erica, of our staff, that, you know, they were the ones working with the CBOs, trying to get all the documentation. And God knows it was a lot of documentation, very detailed, so... You know, great work, Eric and Erica. So thank you for that.
And it's been a real, a lot of detailed work to add on to that, Alejandro, in getting what we originally captured, but the additional level of detail that we're needing to get at this point is even more so. But we know exactly what we need to get, and we will have that.
Well, that concludes my presentation.
If that's the case, are there any other questions before we call for the question, folks? If not, I'd like the motion to approve the audits and the single audit.
What we're approving here in the district is just the district
and the
protection plan.
Right.
The foundation will do the foundation and the single audit approval.
Thank you. Yeah, with that in mind, I'd like to call the question as noted by our Chief Financial Officer. All in favor?
I move approval.
I second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. We have approved that, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Shannon. Thank you, staff. And is there any other business before the district, before we call for adjournment?
No, there's still more, but just wanted to thank Gary and Shannon. Appreciate, you know, the work again this year and the learning experience with the single audit. Shannon, you were very, very helpful in helping guide us through that. And, you know, there's still some education that we will do to better ourselves on, you know, how this whole single audit works. But you've been very helpful and we appreciate that. And, you know, kudos to Eric and as well as Erica in all the support that I've needed from you in accommodating the audits. So unless there's any other questions for...
Well, I guess there's a separate question from this, Chris. When this came up before and we weren't sure whether it was going to be necessary to have the single audit at the very beginning, but this additional cost is being covered by the grant, right?
Right. But in answer to your question, which is very interesting, because we were told verbally during a phone call with the county that the single audit was not required. So when I told you at that point that it was not required, that's what we were verbally told. My mistake was not getting that in writing from the county. So then, you know, at the end of the year when we're, you know, ramping up to do the audit, and, you know, Shannon very experienced with, you know, these types of audits and the documentation, you know, noticed again in the documents that, you know, talked about single audits. So at that point, when I reached out to the county, then they responded and said that the single audit was required. So that's kind of where we were. And, you know, in a sense, we were kind of catching up in a way, because had we understood that we were doing the single audit, we probably would have looked into, you know, more detail as to, okay, what all is absolutely required with this. So it was educational for us, and I think we understand much better going forward.
Well, the only reason I ask this question now is because of the fact that that conversation that we had way back when, and whether since you had the misunderstanding that there would not be, it would not be necessary, then you probably didn't include it in the budget. And then, so was it something that you were able to include in the budget?
It is covered. The cost of the audit is covered by the grant money.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
I do want to add something. The single audit is required when we spend more than $750,000. Is that correct, Shannon?
That's correct, yes.
So when we initially received funding from the county, it was only $600,000. That's why the question was asked, and the answer was no, you don't need a single audit, because it was not above that threshold of $750,000. But they added more and more, and we want them to continue adding money. But that was the reason why the answer changed from the beginning to where we're now.
Okay, understood. Are there any other questions before this committee? If not, I'd like to move for adjournment.
No, we still have a couple of agenda items, Director Shore.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I still have a couple of
Where are they?
They're on the screen.
Number three.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So there's
other matters, item number three.
Shannon and Gary, thank you very much. If you're welcome to stick around if you'd like. If not,
right. We'll be in touch, Chris, on that change.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank bye, everybody. Bye bye.
I'm sorry, Chris. Thank you very much for catching.
No, you're fine. So, informational speaking on item two, which is the retirement protection plan actuarial valuation report. So, we talked quite a bit in general with regard to the audit. But all the information in the audit comes from this actuarial valuation report. And so we can, if we want to go to that, we can look at page good page to look at is just look at page 131. So this is a good comparison to the prior year. So when we're looking at the first line there called total pension liability, so last year when the valuation was done based on annuities for all the participants, we had a pension liability of $9.4 million. We had in the bank $4.8 million. So it showed that we had a net pension liability of $4.6 million, which that to, you know, the reader or the public, you know, public community members that question why we were not funding the total amount of that pension liability, we always needed to explain why we were not funding that. And the reason being is because we were doing only lump sum payouts, we would not be paying annuity payments on all of these people until they, you know, passed away many years later. So that's what kind of, you know, spurred then the conversation then that I had with the actuarial firm to say, okay, let's look at changing the assumptions. And so what was described before and previously in our committee meetings is that we looked at changing the assumptions to being lump sum distributions. So we've taken a relatively conservative approach, we believe, and we still have 5% that we're looking at that may do annuities and 95% of the participants that would take lump sum payouts. And so the adjustment of those assumptions reduces that total pension liability from 9.4 million down to 3.5 million. And because of the good, you know, stock market and investment earnings that we've had, the bank account changed from 4.8 million, increased to 5.3 million, even though we paid out 560 some thousand to the participants that had payouts. So this changes the net pension liability from the 4.6 million last year to what shows here as a negative liability of 1.8 million, which is actually a net pension asset that shows on the district's balance sheet. And that's essentially the, you know, from a summary standpoint here, the only additional item is showing at the bottom of that page where we had 183 members or participants, and that's reduced down to 154 as of June 30th of this year. Any questions you might have with regard to the valuation report?
Thank you.
Okay, that's an informational item. And next item on the agenda is a policy. It's policy number FIN06 regarding financial reserve. And that's on page
146,
145. Yeah, 146 it starts. So we had presented this policy to the policies committee, and from the policies committee standpoint, and it makes sense, was recommended that we bring the policy to the F&A committee since it's a financial related policy. Andrea, could you move that down to page 146, please? So we're bringing it to the F&A committee. The red line version is only showing two changes to this policy, which is increasing what would be the anticipated 2-month operating capital of the hospital should the operator choose to walk away from the lease. Unlikely at this point, but the estimated operating costs are about $125 million. So it also, this also supports then keeping the $60 million in our facilities replacement fund. The other item of change then is on the following page, which is just updating the district's reserve fund, which is currently increasing from $58 million to $60 million. So that's roughly what we have in that account at this point. And then just a title change in 1.4. All the remaining items are unchanged. Are there any questions with regard to the policy?
No, I move approval.
I second that, and the item is passed as submitted. Now, is there any new business before the committee? And if indeed we do not have any, I'd like to adjourn our healthcare district committee meeting, and with approval of my colleagues, move immediately to the foundation agenda, opening the foundation meeting for the month of October. And calling to order, we have President Andrea. I don't need to step on your job. Please call the order.
You had it. You're fine. There's a quorum. You can just proceed.
Okay. I have a motion to approve the agenda on the table, if there is such a motion.
Second.
If so, the motion is carried. Are there any comments from the public, Andrea, that you're aware of?
No public members with us.
Okay, thank you very much. I request a motion to approve the minutes of the September 14th meeting.
So moved.
And seconded. All in favor by
aye.
Aye, thank you very much. Conrado, you're welcome to the floor if you have a report.
Thank you, no report at this time.
Thank you, sir. Chris, would you like to introduce the financial agendas necessary for discussion or presentation and move the item room numeral 6 and 7 on the agenda, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Director Shore. So on page 5 of the packet.
The Honorable Mr. Shore.
The Honorable Mr. Shore. You want honorable Director Shore or Honorable Mr. Shore?
I promise, never again. I had my fun.
Okay. Oh, we should add Honorable Director Shore, Chair of the Finance Committee.
There you go. Okay, it's now complete.
Okay, so page 5 is a summary income statement or profit and loss statement. Essentially showing the current month as well as the year to date for the first 3 months of the year. One of the things that I want to point out here is on the grants line 4003. You'll see that the actual amount is zero versus the budget of $412,000. So at the time that the budget was done, we still had $900,000 remaining from the ELC grant that would be received in the current fiscal year or FY22. So for budget purposes, we had included that in our revenue side of things. When we were working through the audit, we were discussing with the auditors whether to keep that, have it be recognized as revenue in FY22, or if we should consider recognizing the revenue and accruing the unearned revenue of that $900,000 in the prior fiscal year of 21. We concluded that it would be better to keep the revenue all intact for the contract, so we accrued the revenue in FY21. So what we'll see going forward in the current fiscal year is we'll see mostly a zero actual balance going forward throughout the year. Also, an offset to that, once we recognize the revenue, we also establish an expense or the grant payable. So that would be reflected down on account number line 8051, major grant expense. So you're going to see similar budget variance going on in that line as well, because the expense was all recognized in FY21 and has been included in that audit function. Now that's different from what is actually expended with regard to the single audit. So we will still have a single audit for FY22 because we will exceed the $750,000 threshold that would require the single audit. So we will have at least 2 years worth of single audit and maybe more depending on what federal funding we have going forward. So I wanted to point those two line items out to you. The net income projected for the 3 months to date, 38,000 at the bottom and the next to the last column, the net loss. The actual to date is a net loss of 92,000. We do expect that there will be a loss in the foundation, which was also presented in our annual budget. Moving on from that is the balance sheet on page 6. Not much to highlight here. You know, we've got our cash, our savings accounts with Morgan Stanley and Merrill Lynch. The liabilities on the next page, nothing significant to point out here. The next page, though, is one that I like to highlight, which is page 8. So this is our balance sheet that shows our assets and liabilities. And so just on the surface, the first column looks like, you know, hey, we have great assets of $7.7 million. Some in the operating account, others in the investment accounts. But when you spread these out into what we're calling the general fund and restricted funds, you can see that in the restricted funds column, we have down near the bottom, we have about $6 million of liabilities. So the assets needed to cover those liabilities is also $6 million above, which leaves then the remaining general fund asset of $1.5 million. And the $1.5 million is what we're needing to use then to cover some of the overhead allocation that's coming from the district. Some of the overhead is covered by the ELC funds, the administrative component of the ELC funds. Other of the administrative costs is covered by the foundation itself. But all of the overhead that's transferred over to the foundation needs to be paid back to the district. So some of those resources are going to come from this $1.5 million. I just like to point that out because unless we have future funding coming in, that's an item that will probably continue to decline over time.
Chris, I have a question. Does demonstrating on a recurring basis a net loss in the foundation, is that of concern to anybody? Does it have any political implications or ramifications? Or is it merely just something that books demonstrate the way the books demonstrate?
Well, Well, I mean, I think if you have significant losses year over year over year, it's not healthy for the organization. But the foundation, the structure of it as it is from a financial standpoint, is fine to have losses, because you're oftentimes, especially in our environment, we're having like overhead expenses that would be working to generate future revenues. So the desire and hope is that as we're, you know, utilizing our all of our staff, employees, and that to, you know, work towards generating future revenues in the foundation. So there's going to be some negative years, but I think I could be speaking out of turn, but I believe the thought and the idea is that we would be eventually producing some outside revenues that would help support more of the overhead costs.
That's exactly the point of where I was going. I think it's something we have to be very sensitive to as a financial committee and looking and going forward, because it does generate a net conclusion to people looking at the district and the foundation from 30,000 feet, so to speak, without getting into the details and without having you at their side, Chris, to explain the issue from a transactional point of view. I think we just have to be sensitive to this as we produce future budgets and as the organization continues to evolve. That was the purpose of my question. Thank you very much for the explanation.
Next we have deposit detail. If there's any questions there, nothing real significant. Check register, nothing significant there, unless you have questions. A lot of detail on the credit card. That's because Alejandro likes to spend money. But it's all related to the COVID and the collaborative efforts and that. So,
and like they said, you like to eat the, you know, the steak, but you don't like to kill the cow.
Yeah. The only thing
I've never heard that before, but okay.
That's a good one.
And you know, and we're you know, just ensuring that we're getting all of the proper description written on the receipts, who's benefiting from you know, these expenses, you know, what they're specifically for, if they're, you know, for you know, promotoras or whoever's working on the events, that we're noting that specifically on the credit card receipts, and you know, ensuring that we don't have any question from any audit standpoint what the expenses are paid for. So and Alejandro just making sure that we have that level of detail written on the receipts. So thank you. Moving on from that is the main grant payment schedule. This is separate from the pass-through monies on the federal funds. Just highlighting here that we've had one grant for the year, $575,000 for the Borrego community regarding the improving access to healthcare in the Black communities. Down at the bottom, the highlighted line shows that we have $1.5 million that's available to the foundation for grant funding. What I do want to keep in mind is what the page that we were talking about previously, we have $1.5 million really that's in general funds that could be related to this without bringing in additional resources. Moving on to the last page is the pass-through grants on page 13. And so this is the remaining balances that we're working with on the ELC funds, as well as the Public Health Institute funds. So all is essentially paid out on the Public Health Institute monies down somewhat near the bottom in the right-hand column. There's 10,000 that's remaining unspent on the administrative costs for the Public Health Institute. The balance of the liability here is right above that, the 850,000, 853,000, which related to the CARE, well, at this point, the ELC monies. And it's broken down into the 720,000 that's due to the CBOs and 133,000 that we have available for internal administrative costs. Any questions you might have regarding either of the grant payment schedules?
Okay, if there are no questions, I'd like to move the question for approval. Is there such a motion?
I do have one question. The remaining balances, we're gonna expend them by what? Do you have an anticipated date?
Are you talking about the pass-through funds for the
Yes.
LLC?
Yeah.
The end of the contract period is March of 22, March 31st of 22. Okay. So all will be expended by then. Okay. And we do have set up on essentially quarterly basis that we are providing advance funds to the CBOs.
Okay. I move approval.
Second. The motion is carried. Chris, would you like to reintroduce the single audit, please?
Yes. So as we encountered in the district meeting, the audit report for the foundation, as well as the supplemental single audit report, were presented by our audit firm, and all questions were asked and resolved during that district meeting. And at this point, we are looking for a recommendation of approval from the committee.
Do we have a motion for acceptance for this matter?
I move approval to accept.
And I will second that motion, so that motion is carried. Is there any new business before we adjourn? I have one item of new business, just an informational item. I've been invited to sit on to sit on the ACHD Governance Committee, and I've accepted that invitation. So I will be representing the district in that committee meeting going forward. Is there any other new business before the committee?
Well, congratulations.
Honorable Shore.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. I have to change all my business cards now. My God. In any event, I appreciate that, and I look forward to representing the district in that matter. I'd like to call for an adjournment, if that is acceptable to everyone at this time. Hearing nothing to the contrary, we stand adjourned, ladies and gentlemen. Staff,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank you, committee. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Go Dodgers.
Yes. Go
Dodgers is right.
Go Dodgers, yes.
Let's go.
Big blue.
Let's go.
All right. Okay. Good night.
Have a good night, everybody.
All right.